This is the last podcast, the Chicago Way podcast, that I'll do for a few days. The last thing I'm going to do that has anything to do with work. I don't know what the Tribune is going to put in the paper. You know, does John Cass take a day off? Is John Cass ill? Is John Cass mentally ill? But I'm just taking a few days to go fishing in the river up north that I've written about. I just need a break. I need a break from a year of COVID isolation and all the other stuff that we're all going through. And I need a break from politics too, and from culture and from crime and violence. So I'm going fishing. But as I record this, and as heads, liberal heads, explode about the column I wrote about Joe Biden using a race hustle to poison baseball and pressure corporations into, and Major League Baseball into moving the All-Star game from Atlanta over perfectly legal and reasonable voter laws. I was thinking about a guy from Chicago, a tough guy named McGinty. Now, when I was a new kid in the newsroom centuries ago, where grizzled and impossibly cynical old timers with white hair, yeah, they smoked and made wisecracks. I mean, they must have been like in their 50s. They hang around the city desk before going out on stories. I was a different person. I was something of a liberal. Not, I mean, woke or anything, but I believed in something they talked about called good government, the good government people. And I was excited by an idea pushed by the liberal left that I guess would now be called Jim Crow and racist by the wokists of today. But back then, in Chicago, people wanted something they called good government, and the way to get it was to have people involved in elections and believe in voter integrity. And they had a concept that seemed really, I don't know, quite reasonable. The machine hated it, but the IVIIPO, the Independent Voters of Illinois, independent precinct organizations, and others just like them, these are the grandparents of today's wokists, they thought it was an important idea, and so did I. They wanted to clean up the voter rolls, to make the voter rolls current and purge the dead voters and those who moved away. Because I learned something in the years since, that political control in the city of Chicago begins with the Chicago Board of Election Commissioners. And groups like the IVIIPO and others would hold their meetings in, you know, really liberal islands like Hyde Park, and they demand the voting rolls be brought up to date. And columnists and editorialists would write about how this was critical to good government. Why? Why was it critical? Because those on the lists who didn't vote or hadn't voted, whether they were prevented from doing so by death or the Grim Reaper or a move to the suburbs or a move to another ward, they were all doing something amazing. Many of them were still voting, even while dead. I know it's a joke, but it happened in Chicago. And I called a guy who ran precincts for the machine. He passed just the other day, just before I wrote that Biden poisons baseball column. He'd be one of the, when he was young, he'd pass out half pints of booze to the stew bums and the winos on election day on the west side. And he even went out to West Virginia to work the Kennedy campaign. And I asked him about it. Quote, "We voted everybody," he told me. Well, not everybody, because you didn't want to be too greedy, but lots of them. Which brings me to The Great McGinty, a Depression-era movie directed by the great Preston Sturges, a movie that even Joe Biden might remember on a good day. Set in Chicago, it starred Brian Dunleavy as a drunk, pulled up out of the gutter, recruited by the political machine to help with their election efforts. They had lists of the dead, and tough guy drunk Dan McGinty would vote in their names for cash. He'd go from one polling place to another, one ward to another, different names. He had the name, the dead man's name, or person's name. I guess it was man. Brian Dunleavy wouldn't be mistaken for a woman. And he'd vote their names in for cash. And one of the machine hacks explained all it to him and talked about how it was virtuous, that what they were doing were helping the people. And McGinty says, "Never mind the applesauce. How do I get the bucks?" Because he was paid to do it. And he was so enthusiastic, he kept getting promoted. Precinct captain, ward boss, alderman. And eventually he became the reform candidate for mayor. That's reform with quotation marks. Now, there's nothing wrong with asking about voter ID. It's not Jim Crow racism. It's not suppression or oppression. It's just common sense. Look at the picture. John Cass wants to vote in his precinct, which I did. Look at the picture. Is that the guy that wants to vote? My friend and co-host, Jeff Carlin, executive producer at WGN Radio, and I will talk about this and more. I'm John Cass, columnist at the Chicago Tribune, member of its editorial board. Most importantly, I'm a husband to Betty and a father of two sons, an Orthodox Christian struggling through Lent. We're going to talk about Jeff's cat scratch fever, why I'm taking a few days off, and we're going to deal with your questions. Wow. So many questions. I posted on my Facebook pages whether you had any questions for the Chicago Way. I have two pages. I don't know why. I don't know how that started. Someday I'll figure it out. And there were hundreds and hundreds of questions. We've got to do more of this. One of my favorite ones came from a young man named Kevin Kokoska, a noted aficionado of spirits, who asked me, "What is your favorite Maduro cigar?" That was a great question, Kev. Now, if you like what you're listening to, I hope you subscribe free on Spotify, iTunes, other platforms, wherever you get your podcasts, free. And give us a review. And don't worry about the applesauce. And I'm not going to pay you for it. If you don't like what you hear, don't give me a review. If you like what you hear, make sure it's 5 stars. And where are you with the country forgetting the great McGinty, just when the great McGinty is needed to explain how things really work? You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, John.
Well, we're back here on the Chicago Way after a brief hiatus. I got loopy from the second dose of the coronavirus vaccine and had the chills.
Yeah.
And it was, but you know what? Jeff Carlin has got cat scratch fever.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, John, you and I haven't really gotten to catch up, but I got cat scratch fever. That's what was kind of laid me up.
I don't know what that is. Is that sexual or something? I don't mean
to. No, it's not a thing. I mean, it's just cats. Yeah. You know, so the backup, cat bites, cat scratches, you know, cats are dirty. They
filthy.
Yeah. And their mouths are home to horrible things like staph and MRSA and all sorts of gnarly things that you don't want in your body. But long story short, my aunt adopted a cat that was recently feral and it got stuck in a spot and I went to grab it and it bit me, and it bit me really good, like fang down to the bone kind of thing on my knuckle and on my underside of my hand, and it swole up and it's been bad.
I saw the photographs. I'm just going to testify. Jeff's hand was as large as a football. I mean, yeah, it was just swollen. Like, why don't you just chop it off and slap some hot iron on it?
Pretty much, yeah. In Game of Thrones, I would have been a one-handed knight, or because I couldn't be an archer.
Because you couldn't pluck you.
Right, exactly, pluck you. Yeah, and so that was crazy. And it's the worst part, though, is the antibiotics, because there are a lot of weird side effects from heavy antibiotics. And it's been a trip. So that's why John and I have been incommunicado for the last 2 weeks or so. Just random crazy life getting in the way.
And then we asked people on Facebook. I've got two Facebook pages. I don't know why, but I do. We asked people to, you know, if they have any questions for the Chicago Way. And you know what? There were like hundreds of comments, hundreds of questions. It was great. Great to read them. Jeff had to read them all because I was working on the column to drive the left insane, which was Joe Biden poisoned baseball. So Jeff had to read them. wow, Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some good ones. You know what they say, distance makes the heart grow fonder. I think that's why. Why there were so many. Not really. I think there are a lot of good fans out there. But before we jump into those two, John, I also on the cat front, I adopted a three-legged cat. A three-legged cat. And he's awesome. And it's amazing.
Is this one going to bite your other fingers?
No. He's really sweet. Not that type of cat. But it's three legs. He can get around amazing, which is just a marvel to me.
What is with you and these cats? Like, you have Tyrion the half cat, who's, mm-hmm. you know, is, I would assume, some sort of dwarf cat.
Yeah.
You know, some genetic thing.
Yeah. That's what they are.
Right. And now you have a three-legged cat.
Yeah. My other cat is cross-eyed. We're the island of misfit cats over here.
If you can hear my, if I sound like I'm suffering from allergies, it's because I am. Even when Jeff talks about his cats on Zoom, I get ill.
Yeah, there's some science behind that, I'm sure.
Some psychoscience. tell me about this cat. It looks like a black cat with green eyes.
Yeah, a little black cat with these bright green eyes. He came from a rescue in Kentucky, Tennessee, somewhere there. But he was the rescue had flooded, and so he'd gotten out and got his leg caught in a trap. So they had to take the leg, you know, remove the rest of the leg. So it's only been about 2 months or so that he's been without it, but he gets around amazingly well, and he's very sweet. He's a little, you know, dealing with some trauma in his life, so he's a little weird at times, licking stuff. And the poor cat, he'll like fall asleep on my chest and then wake up in a night terror, and it's totally him dreaming about losing his leg, because he just freaks out, staring at his leg, like crying. It's just, it's heartbreaking, but it's happening less and less. And he's much more at home here with the other cats. They're all getting along. So,
well, you and Christine are very kind people, and I'm sure you're going to help this creature, this familiar of Satan, get stronger as it grows.
Right. Yep. Yep.
You know, there's some other news. I just saw on Facebook, Carrie Nahabedian's posting for kitchen help.
Yeah.
We had her on. She's on Facebook saying, you want to work at Brundeal, apply. These poor chefs, these restaurants, they're not getting the people they need. So anybody who wants to be a chef, now's your time. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you got the passion for it,
right.
Now is the time. Absolutely. And John, how are you post-COVID dose two? You're feeling better now? And
yeah, I didn't know. I posted something like, I don't even know what was in my Sunday column, but it's true. I was writing about writers who died. Beverly Cleary.
Mm-hmm.
Henry and Ribsy when I was a boy, and Larry McMurtry. And I was trying to write this thing, and I you have fevers, chills.
Mm, yeah.
And Kristen McQuarrie and Trevor Jensen both helped me with the column. I mean, I got through with it. By the time I posted, and I was a smart ass the day I got the shot, you know, going to Priscilla's for chicken and mocking Georgia voter people, you know, who are upset. And then it hit me. So it was like the wrath of the woke gods or something. And it hit me. But yeah, I'm good now. And I'm going fishing, man. This is the last thing I'm going to do. This podcast is the last thing I'm going to do this week.
I love it.
I haven't taken any kind of time for myself since, you know, the boys were born. And I'm just going to go fishing.
I love it.
Betty's really cool, and she's helping me get ready. So
are you? You're just going solo, or are you going with brothers?
I'm gonna go with a friend of mine named Steve. He's an airline pilot, and we're going, and some other guys, and we're going a Chicago-based fly fisherman, and we're going to a river up north. I wrote about going to that river, many times, and I just want to see it again.
That's awesome. So, fly fishing. That's I always see it and I always think, I can't wrap my head around the particulars of it, but I imagine it's a lot of untying of knots at times when you first start doing it. But that's
we're gonna have guides. So basically, all I had to do was get my cool fly fishing gear.
Your waders.
Waders, boots, and so forth.
Cool.
It was really nice, and they work. And I'm going to probably take the boys up.
Awesome.
There in the fall for the salmon run. I don't know. Is it like the persona that has been created about me, or that I've helped create, probably with fishing? You probably think of me with a six pack, sleeping under a tree, you know, at the Market Park Lagoon. Right?
Yeah, it's exactly.
Bullheads or something.
Smelt guy.
Yeah, smelt guy. I got a bucket of smelts for you.
Yeah.
But this is fly fishing, and it's good. You're walking in a river and listening to the grouse thrumming on the other side of the bank and looking for that big steelhead in the holes. So that's me.
That'll be awesome.
I want to brag about it because some people have to go on vacation.
Yeah.
Others have to go to work, and so others are mourning the dead of Chicago, because as we speak, you know.
Yeah, that's really, you're right. You're right on the nose there. I mean, I feel guilt, and I know that's just kind of the modern era we live in, that everyone's got to feel guilty about everything they do because all things matter. You want to plan stuff like that, but then you look around and you think, oh gosh, you know, the city in Chicago is lit up every day with gunfire and death and, you know, young kids, and what's going on? How are we stopping, and how are we addressing it? And we're not.
A baby was shot just the other day on Lakeshore Drive. They said, they came out quick and said it was road rage, but you know, who knows what it is now. I don't really trust the government anymore, local government either, to say the truth. And then you have And I'm sure it was wrote. I guess it was, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. That stretch of Lakeshore and that whole area, there's a lot of aggressive driving. I've made a, my friend Brian lives, you know, on the south side, and I go and hung out with him, and I had to go that way. In fact, to get my COVID shot, I had to go to Olympia Fields to get it. So I cruised through there, and he always talks about how aggressive people are. So I'm not surprised at the road rage thing. It's just, you know, my mom was telling me that my whole life, that you never know what the other person's got going on. So
yeah, just, anybody who gets, you know, gets cut off and gets mad about it, think about, you know, getting shot for it, for your anger.
Absolutely. You know, because, not worth it.
But the larger, another question on that is, how unsafe do people feel about Chicago?
Yeah, very unsafe. I mean, you know, people criticize us and, you know, those in general who highlight the problems in the city as being doomsayers or naysayers or just being negative for the case of being negative. But I mean, in this last, what is it, month or so, we've had 10 shootings every day, every night.
Mass shootings.
Right. And then mass shootings too. And that's a whole other thing too. But my point more too is that it's not even just that, like that is growing. That's kind of like the background noise now in this city that we just ignore or, you know, paper over. But it's we've been talking about this too, but in the last month, there was someone who was stabbed in the neck downtown, literally blocks from the most expensive zip codes in the city.
Why?
For no reason.
You're missing something.
Yeah.
Why was it? Because it's this kind of story, which I think, you know, was kind of made the news, but it wasn't as prominent as I think as a political issue. Mm-hmm. So a person was walking down the street and a panhandler asked him for money, right?
Yeah.
And he said no. And the panhandler stabbed him in the neck.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of crimes that people see and they're like, okay, you know, mm-hmm. I'm not going down there. That's what those are the crimes that they see, and politicians know it, and they get upset when people like us talk about it because, oh, you shouldn't talk about that. Really?
Right.
Well, people are talking about it to themselves, to their mm-hmm. friends, families, you know, what are you supposed to do? Carry a wad of singles around so you could buy your way down Michigan Avenue?
Yeah. I mean, I think the news cycle at that time was being caught up with whether or not Water Tower Place is deserving of a target. I mean, that was the alternative story. And it's like, really? This is a story? This is it? This is what we're looking at?
Well, that was the story where everybody who was woke could scream at Maria Pappas.
Yeah.
You know, how dare you, Maria? We need a target in Water Tower. Why don't you have like a Ronnie's Steakhouse too on Michigan Avenue? Remember Ronnie's over by WLS?
Yeah.
I used to get breakfast there for me and Tracy and you sometimes.
Yeah. It's a
working man's diner kind of, but it's not. When I think of Michigan Avenue, I think of Zengia, you know, designer stuff, Burberry. Mm-hmm. I'm not thinking of Big Ben's 2 for $5, which is what we used to have on 111th Street. You get two pairs of shoes for $5.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to go back too far to the times when State Street was, you know, an adult bookstore paradise. I mean, it's...
Yeah, and she got all this grief. But at the same time, Jeff, how did that work out? The beating up Maria Pappas so that they didn't have to... Which I think she was legitimate. I mean, it's Michigan Avenue, and that should be the pinnacle of shopping.
Yeah. I mean, that part of it aside, I don't really have a good dog in that fight. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I don't either.
Next Dollars, Target's a good company. They you know, for what they do... So I don't know on that one, but I think the bigger picture too is the idea that we're papering over all lots of the violence in this city, and not just us. I mean, spoke to the mass shooting idea that there's a mass shooting almost every day in Chicago, especially by woke standards, which is, you know, three or more people, or now I think it's four or more people, but they, right. but that doesn't get national coverage anywhere. But you know what does get national coverage?
What?
Mayor Lightfoot on MSNBC because she wants to criticize something, or Mayor Lightfoot on CNN because she wants to criticize something. I mean, that right. they're not here asking her, oh, why are so many people dying every day? Or you're not dying, but getting shot every day in your city. No, they're not asking you those questions.
I've been writing about the forgotten murder victims for a long time
now. Yeah.
They get dropped into the river of violence and they float away and we forget their names even when they're children. And now even some of the more liberal commentators are saying, why aren't we involved in why isn't Chicago mentioned in the national violence mm-hmm. issue? Well, it's because the press was trained. You know, Trump would bring it up and everyone would rip on him for it. And now it's still happening. Guess what? Trump didn't do it, even without Trump. And you're right. Yeah. Lori goes on MSNBC to talk to her cheerleaders while she's got this thing. And what's going on with that business in Little Village in Pilsa? What happened there with that 13-year-old?
Ah, geez. I mean, there's so many layers to that story, but I mean, the first piece of it is how the city is handling it, I guess. Not the city, the officials, but the city as a whole, you know, is handling it. There's one situation where it's just jump to be angry about it. And yeah, absolutely. The 13-year-old gets shot and killed and everyone should be angry because that's not the society we should be striving for. But everybody is being angry without really knowing what they're being angry about. And it's crazy. I mean, you have an Alderman Cardenas, who said that he was saying that this kid who got killed had nobody, you know, he had nobody in his life to protect him. And nobody in his life to protect him is what he said. And the family got upset and said, well, he was in a loving family. And how dare you? And the lawyer put out the statement, you know, essentially calling Cardenas out for being insensitive. But his point was they missed his point entirely because they're making up their own narrative or they're just choosing to ignore the reality that a 13-year-old boy was on the streets at 2:30 in the morning. Why? Right. That's the question. And he wasn't calling them out. He wasn't saying that they are bad parents, that the bad people around him. He was saying that we as a society aren't doing anything to keep this from happening. And they want to make it about him.
At the beginning of this story, this is the 13-year-old boy, Adam Toledo, mm-hmm. shot by police. There's video, I'm told. Senior police sources tell me there's video as we're doing this podcast now. Lori Lightfoot has yet to release it. Hello, yeah. Rahm. Hello, Rahm Emanuel.
She supposedly has yet to even see it. I mean, I don't know if that's changed.
That's bothersome because she could say that. You know, Rahm would say that.
Right.
And it's not. It rings hollow, Lori. Mm-hmm. You're the mayor of Chicago. You're in charge of this.
Yep.
You know, did she have her chief of staff of police that runs the police department, one of these suits at City Hall? You know, not the cops, not David right. Brown, these suits that she has. Did they see it? Did the boy have a gun in his hand? I want to know because people when the story broke, and this happens all the time with such stories, little boy shot on the street, you know, sometimes you know, midnight, 2:30 in the morning, or a multiple shooting where there's like four kids shot. And the reporters invariably, sometimes, I think too often, more often than not, don't report up high. It was 3:00 in the morning and the boy was by himself. You know, what are you doing in the alley, 13-year-old? Mm-hmm. 3 in the morning. But it's sort of like a political judgment made even in the coverage. So we're not going to, you know, everybody's a victim. And of course, this child is a victim. But right. he's a victim of a lot more than just, he's a victim of everything.
Yeah, where, I mean, he's a victim.
His family, man. His parents, his upbringing. You know, I don't know. I heard, was he a member of the Latin Kings? Was he newly inducted into the Latin Kings? Did he have a tattoo of the crown, which unfortunately looks like the Chicago Fire crest, which is why they're changing it. But what's the real story, Lori? And I haven't, as of now, as of we're doing this, I haven't. And she's gone off and said some, she's just gotten into the angry Lori.
Right. I mean, she came out, to say that we need to change the way, we need to discontinue foot police policy or foot chase policy, or and change the way we're doing that. What? And that before, and this is the woman who said she hasn't seen the video. Like, how can you do that? How can you stand there and call for, you know, transformative change without knowing the facts?
Jeff, people are getting shot in Chicago. People are leaving. You walk down Michigan Avenue, you better have, you know, as we said, a handful of singles to pass out to all the homeless people, because you're going to be afraid that they're going to stab you if you don't give them money. And then you say, oh, get rid of foot patrol or get rid of foot chases. What are they supposed to chase them with? Drones?
Right.
And then if they do catch them, where's the prosecutions with Kim Fox and Tim Evans and all that nonsense that they've been doing with bail bonds and so forth? So the overriding feeling among some, not all, some like it, I guess, some like it, you know, but many taxpayers don't like it. And yeah. They don't hold a news conference. They don't show up on NBC. They're not hugging Kamala Harris and walking in a, you know, in the B-roll.
Right.
Right? Like Lori does. They just leave. They just leave Chicago because they're not going to take it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, self-interest. Everybody, that's the name of the game. And it's just terrible. And you're right about the press conference thing too, is one of the things. Like my producing partner, Brian Altimer, who, you know, grew up in Englewood. He still lives there. I mean, he's a Chicago guy, true and true, former Marine.
Yeah.
And he's the guy who, in my world, he tracks press conferences. He records them. So we have them for our archive. He pulls stuff from them. And the thing that he has been bothered by the most out of all of this is that, you used to be a time in the city where if, you know, 10 people got shot in an overnight, there would be a press conference and the mayor and the police chief would be out there and saying, hey, we're working on this. Yeah, we get this. We know that, yada, yada, yada. Well, that's gone. Like, there haven't been press conferences. I mean, this summer or the winter, rather. I mean, it just felt like there was just none of that. There was no one out there being like, well, you know, we got to figure out what to do. I mean, I don't care if you're, you know, it's lip service. You did come out once a week. I mean, remember when Lightfoot started, she said she was going to have a once a week, Monday morning, you know, accountability meeting with all the police chiefs. And then they'd have a press conference and she'd talk about what they talked about. I mean, those things are gone. I mean,
accountability Mondays.
Right. And it's, and now it's just this weird situation where we're just kind of going to ignore what's going on and look at other things. I mean, I get it too, that there's the pandemic stuff and they're stretched thin because, you know, we live in a city where every dollar of taxes we pay, you know, there's a graft and bribery tax and
it goes to the pensions.
Right. And so then we've got the most outdated systems for pretty much everything in this state and city. You know, stuff that was new in the 70s. So I get it. There's a lot going on, but I don't think that this is something that you can just push to the side and just not address.
I'm surprised too that she would not release the video, given all her criticism of Rahm Emanuel.
Right.
Knowing, and you know, I was involved in all that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that what happens when you don't release the video and you're not clear,
mm-hmm.
There was a, we had the rioting, one of the second, or was it the third wave of looting?
Yeah, one of the, mm-hmm.
Whatever it was that she couldn't handle on downtown, where there was a story that went out on the South Side that a young man was shot by police, and this went all over, you know, social media, particularly on among those who would loot, and they came down, and then it turned out they put out a video with the kid pulling a gun on the police officer, right? Did I get that?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, it's.
So why did they wait?
The gist of the story was a kid was not just randomly shot by a cop, and then that, yeah, exactly.
Right. He was not randomly shot. He was not just the innocent victim walking home. And as a result, by not acting, she lost control of the city for the third or fourth or fifth or sixth jillionth time. and more looting was done on North Michigan Avenue and Oak Street, you know, the Gold Coast.
Yep.
And she was upset about that. Well, here you have this situation with this poor child, the 13-year-old boy, where you're having people, whether they're legitimate gangbangers or just agitators, agitating threats to police as a result. This is a bad situation. So you have to get out in front of it. And from what I understand, the police have been asking City Hall, meaning Lori, to get out in front. And she'd much rather, you know, let things dangle while she figures out where the politics are.
Right. And that's the part that bothers me, is that we're playing politics with this stuff. And that, you know, I say this all the time and I hate it. And you know, people want to be powerful and be politicians, but they overlook the first line of that. The first line of that job description is, you're a public servant. You're serving us. So when you alter the truth or delay the truth, which is the same as lying, to further your political power, or political agenda, you're not serving us. You're serving you. And that makes you a failure as a public servant. And that you can't get around that logic, because that is exactly where we stand with the mayor. And I think she came into this job with great intentions to try to, and she's done some great stuff for protecting, you know, keeping corruption out of the city, you know, fixing some of the problems. And
she's saving us from Christopher Columbus and perhaps Abraham Lincoln statues.
Right.
I mean, Leif Erikson. Oh, my God. I guess.
I know. But my grander point is that she came into this. And I think that the job has been a much bigger task. And she looked beyond it too soon. I mean, I think the first, you know, 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, maybe a year of her in that position, she was sailing, and she was doing all the things that she talked about, all the reforms.
Superhero.
Right. And then the real nitty gritty of running a government set in. And I don't think she's handled it well. I think she was soaring so high and had bigger ambitions, and now she can't get away from those ambitions, and the city, I think, is suffering for it. I mean, and to be fair, we know that there are a lot of groups who are working against her in the city, including allegedly the Democratic Party in
Tony
Cook County.
Right. Tony Preckwinkle can't stand her. And Lori smoked Preckwinkle in every ward. The teachers union is even more powerful. They're like the teachers unions now are the funding arm and enforcement arm of the Democratic Party.
Right.
In Illinois. And Governor Pritzker just gave them more power to strike over anything they want.
Yeah.
And right. And Lori's like, what's going on? Well, Lori, you're supposed to be on top of this. And that's why you have political people around you. But see, she was the anti-corruption mayor, right? The above the federal prosecutor above it all. But you know what? Sometimes you need men and women who understand the rat holes.
Right. Right?
To go into the rat holes. And she doesn't have that. So, you know, she didn't want to, she couldn't deal with Madigan well. She couldn't deal with anybody well. And if you criticize her, she gets upset.
Right. And that's the other thing. I mean, I genuinely assume, know that I like Lori, you know, there's nothing, I have nothing against her as a person, but I just think she's just, this job is way too much. And on the Preckwinkle thing, because this just infuriates me. I mean, for all intents and purposes, Preckwinkle looks like, talks like, acts like a socialist. I mean,
she is a socialist. That's what the Democratic Party is. Just admit it.
Right. That's fine. I mean, I don't want to be the one labeling them themselves, but exactly. So my point is that if we're going to be socialists, then you guys need to give up the Democratic Party part of it, because she, Lightfoot, they're giving her, they've just been at her throat every step of the way. And she was elected by everybody, but right. It wasn't even close. So the people spoke. And so if they were legitimately trying to make this country a better place, they would have gotten in line with her and said, hey, okay, yeah, we lost. Let's work together. Let's do what needs to be done to make every citizen's life better. What did they do? No, they turned around and said, what are we going to do to make our power better and limit her power and make sure we can take power when it's time?
Well, that's what human beings do.
Yeah, but human beings nature. Don't do that. No, that's not right, John. Animals do that. Animals are self-interested. Human beings have the logical precept in our brains to understand that our personal being, our personal interest does not always have to be front and center, that we're smart enough as creatures, and that has given us the ability to take over the world, to do that over animals. And I'm not calling them animals in a derogatory sense. I'm calling them, and I'm not even really calling them animals. I'm just calling them the idea that if you can only see self-interest and not see the other interest of the greater good, really the greater good.
Right.
You're not doing it right.
Well, I don't know, Jeff. If you keep going like this, you're going to end up like me. So all I'm saying is that at one time I was somewhat liberal, and I remember liberals demanding to clean the voting rolls, you know, purge them of the dead. And now, if you say that, you're, I guess, a Jim Crow, Jim Crow from the South and from Georgia and elsewhere, they'll call you that. But it's the same thing. The businesses of politics is to understand that people have interests and they will pursue those interests. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with pursuing the interests. What's wrong is when you have a system like Chicago, where the teachers union is so powerful, they take the money from the people, and then they organize the children into political cadres, and they pressure the taxpayers for even more money. Lori Lightfoot's problem is she's inexperienced, and she kept going woke and rolling for the teachers union, giving them the largest contract in the history of man. The richest teachers in the country are teaching the Chicago public schools. But she also then, to protect herself, or so she thought, she picked a fight with the cops.
Yeah.
Right? Why? Why, Lori? Do you have to be woke too? You had to be woke. I mean, that's why when she came on, she was on with us on the podcast, and I used to talk to her. I said, look, you have to have people around you. Remember? I think
absolutely.
You have to have people around you who understand politics of Chicago. And she even asked us, you and I, to come up with some book ideas.
Yeah.
Yep. And I thought it was just too cheap of a column. I don't think I ever did it. Or maybe if I did it, then I am indeed cheap. But I don't remember it.
I don't remember, yeah.
I don't remember writing it. I should have. Because there's plenty. And it's all about self-interest and balancing. That's why Mike Madigan held power, Jeff, for, 50 years?
Yeah.
He understood. And that's why Richard J. Daley, the real Daley, not the Mayor Fredo son.
Right.
understood. Human interest is personal interest. And you have to be able to marshal those forces and balance them out in order to run a complex organism like the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it'll devour you. And what do you think is happening to Lori right now?
Absolutely. And I want to say, too, that, you know, I get people call me an idealist in the idea of public service and all that and the critiques.
I didn't say that to you.
No. I'm not saying that, John. I'm just saying that people will. I mean, I'm not dense. I get that. And it's self-interesting. I get that. I appreciate that. And you're right, though, that when you're not prepared for the fight, if you will, which I hate putting those terms into that stuff. But if you're not ready for it, the battle, whatever you want to call it, it's this institutional knowledge thing that we've talked about plenty of times, that if you don't have that, you don't know how it was, or don't know what is behind the doors you don't want to open. You're not going to be able to do it.
If you don't know the Chicago way, you can't run Chicago. That's how it is. And that's why it makes me laugh with all these like wokists and mocking it and all that, or all these people coming with remember those fellows came with the new Chicago way, right?
Yeah.
Really? It hasn't changed. It's about human beings pursuing what they want to pursue. And it's about government in the way of allowing one of them, or just a few, to dominate the others and eat them all, you know, devour them like a pack of, what would I say, wolves, hunting dogs, something.
Right.
Because the you know what that piece of meat is? It's taxpayers. Okay. And they're leaving. They're leaving. That's absolutely why these stories in the papers. Oh, the suburban real estate market is doing so well. Really? I wonder why.
Yeah.
You think it's after the third wave of looting?
Right, absolutely.
Right.
Gosh, I know. It's just baffles me. I don't know. I don't know, John.
When we move into
an island in the Caribbean, jeez.
You know what? There's the island of Laputa, where all the reason lives, all the people, right, the reasons, the people that reason with everything, the scientists, the experts. That was Mr. Swift.
Yeah. Right? Well, John, before we go, we got a ton of questions. You want to dive into some?
Yeah, would you? Because there were so many, and we're going to do this. I mean, we're partners here on this, but we do this more often than not because people have to be heard.
This is from Chris Toft. John, what do you think the Chicago Fire will do this season? And are you happy with Joe Mansueto's ownership so far?
Yes, I am. I'm happy because he was on the Chicago way last year, was it?
Yeah. No, 2 years ago.
Two years ago. And we were talking about the importance of building a spine in a team.
Right.
And what he's got is, he's got improved defense and the spine of the two good midfielders, you know, Jimenez and Medran. And then, of course, there's a new one, Luca, who's now number eight, and he's a box-to-box midfielder. Seems like a pretty tough guy. So you build from the middle up. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy. And I have to make a shout out too, because I don't have the questions in front of me right now because I'm technologically, but there are two pages on Facebook. There's my friends page. I don't know how
that works. And then there's a fans page.
I don't know what. Yeah, I don't like to call it that because it's just the way to communicate.
That's Facebook's term, not you.
Yeah, but there was a reader, Kevin Kokoska, who asked me, what's my favorite Maduro cigar? And I would like to say, Kevin, you're so very kind to ask me that very important question, because I'm going to have some when I'm fishing on the river. But I will just picture me happy with a smile and a Maduro cigar in my teeth and the fly rod in my hand. But I will say, I'm not going to say what my favorite is, because if I do, I know Kevin. Kevin is the kind of kind person who would go out and get me a box. And I can't ask that of anyone.
There you go.
Because we don't put the velvet arm on anybody. Even Kevin Kokoschka. But Kev, if you're listening and I do run into you someday, I will have a nice glass of bourbon and a good cigar with you, sir.
I think the correct answer, John, would be the one in my hand. All right. I got another one for you. This comes from Brian Gilmartin. Wanted to know if you've ever read the book Murder in Canaryville?
No, but I've heard about it and I'm going to read it. I hear it's good. It's written by a colleague of mine, Jeff Cohen, and a police officer, detective. And I think it'd be a good book.
Yeah.
Read it. I'm reading Jason Riley's book, Thomas Sowell, and I'm reading, Amari's book on questions for his son. Editorial page editor of the New York Post, and should be a great book. And maybe we'll have them both on.
Yeah, I'm down for that. I just do some more authors here. I love that. I do have, let's see, here's another one for you, John.
Is it just John? It's a question to the Chicago way, so you can answer.
Well, yeah, but some of these are, I mean, it's your page, John, so I'm okay being the courier of questions. Here we go. This is Bernie Doe, who's asking, or asking about the foot pursuit order. Which we kind of already talked about a little bit.
Why have foot pursuits if you're not going to have prosecutions? Right. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Andy Olson, and I'll you go first, and I'll jump on this one after. But Andy Olson asked the best place to grab a beer in Chicago, and that's a tough one for me to narrow it down to one.
Best place. Well, before Biden poisoned baseball, it would have been Sox Park.
I think you meant Wrigley. mine would be, that's a tough one. I'd probably say that too, or maybe at my sitting in the porch at my dad's house, having a beer is always fun. That's probably it. Sticking with Chicago, I'd probably say there's a great place. There's a great brewery, Iris Brewery. They do some ciders and stuff. That's one of my favorites. But
Maplewood Brewery is a pretty good brewery. They make
I've heard good things about them.
I know I know those guys. They make this great beer called Charlatan Pale Ale, which is really good. I guess it's an ale. I've got one for you.
Sure.
This is from Dennis McInerney. Question to the Chicago Way. Have you ever smoked Parmesan cheese, or for that matter, any kind of cheese, as Hunter admitted doing?
No. I saw that question, and I thought, what, smoking meats? And then I realized, then I continued reading, oh, yeah, right, no. God, that's a that yeah. Again, people, we gotta keep an eye on who we let into our influence our world. I don't want the Hunter Bidens of the world impacting anything that happens.
Well, I guess when you get off the plane with your dad, and the foreign governments make you a multimillionaire, you gotta the influence has already begun. Oh. Here's one from Tim Schwartz. Ask Jeff's cat what he did to warrant a bite.
All right. Yep. That was not my cat, but yes. The cat did nothing other than just hide, and it was kind of stuck. And I, it was a scared cat, new cat. So it certainly, as soon as I got bit, because I was reaching at it, and I knew this cat was kind of finicky and could bite, it had a history of just being scared, not being being touched. So I don't blame the cat. I definitely blame me. I should have been wearing gloves, work gloves. I've got plenty of them, but I was impetuous and just did it. So cat did nothing other than just being a cat, like most cats.
There was a great letter from Michelle Pyramont Christensen in one of the on one of the Facebook pages, Questions to the Chicago Way. It's really a comment.
Mm-hmm.
From a column in our local paper. This is part of a speech by Robert Duvall in Secondhand Lions. Have you ever seen that movie?
Oh, yeah.
I love that movie.
Yeah, good movie.
Secondhand Lions, great movie, great family movie. Sometimes the things that may or may not be true are the things that a man needs to believe in the most. The people that people are basically good, that honor, courage, and virtue mean everything, that power, money, money and power mean nothing, that good always triumphs over evil. And I want you to remember this, that love, true love, never dies. Doesn't matter if any of this is true or not. You see, a man should believe in those things because they are the things worth believing in.
Awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
I got another one here for you, John. Yeah. Rose Oliveri wants to know how your brother Pete is doing. She's an old customer from Gage Park Foods.
Oh, yeah. The Cass brothers are doing well. Peter is in the store management business. We lost our family business years ago, but he's working out in the western suburbs, Naperville, managing a grocery store. One of the guys on the front line who went to work every day so that people could get their half pound of American cheese. Okay, and while teachers in Chicago couldn't teach.
Right.
But what about all those? I always wondered about these cashiers. The cashiers, many of them are women. Their kids are at home, not going to school. And the cashiers are getting breathed on by thousands of people a day. Yeah. Anybody care about them? Not too much.
When the pandemic first started, and like we were dealing through that, and finally we could go back to stores. I tried to like tip the guy who at the cashier, just be like, "Hey man, get a cup of coffee on me because I know your life is, you know, you're dealing with some stuff." And he's like, "Yeah, I can't take that. That's against policy." I'm like, "Oh, okay, well, good luck." But yeah, that was the look in people's eyes. You always felt like, "Ah, oh, like you're just, you know, this is where we are. These people have to be here, but." You know, we can't be in classrooms. I just,
I know,
you
know, but
seeing the same 50 people a day, but no.
But they get breathed on.
Yeah.
Poor women.
Ugh.
Here's one.
Nope.
There's so many of these, you guys.
I know.
Love these. All right. From John Brozek. Brozek, R-O-Z-E-K. When you had a garden, did you use heirloom non-GMO seeds? If so, where did you get them? You are my journalistic port in this storm of disinformation and bias. You don't want to get too fancy with the tomato. You know, here's a guy without a garden, so I should be able to. It's just like a political reporter who never ran for office. You know everything. But I used to plant heirloom tomatoes, and I planted, you know, like early girls and big beef steaks. So I planted both kinds of tomatoes. And I will tell you, it's the soil. Mike Hartley, one of the loyal readers of the Trib, and the guy who taught me how to really grow tomatoes, he sent me like a manifesto of like 30 pages. It's all about the soil. And I used to go to a place, and I guess if I ever get a garden again, I will go back there. It's called Vern Goer's Greenhouse. It's in Hinsdale.
We talked to Vern or the folks were there a couple years ago.
Yeah, did a seed column.
Started the
seeds.
Yeah. Here's another one for
stock
you.
Stock is outstanding there.
Yeah. Bill Barrow, B-E-R-O. John, what was your favorite alderman back in the Daily Cal days and your favorite editor?
Well, the favorite alderman at that time was, when I was a kid reporter, was Edward R. Verdoliak. And it was like covering Mephistopheles / Prince of the City / de facto mayor of Chicago / like political Frank Sinatra type. It was just fascinating. For a writer, young writer, it's fascinating.
Oh, I bet.
I worked for the Daily Calumet, but I'm from the Southwest Side. Everyone thinks, oh, you're from the East Side. No, I'm not. There is an East Side. The people I worked with, let's see, Shirley Kayer. I think Bill Barrow, too. That sounds familiar. Denny Halloran and Robert Bong. And I have to say, they were all very good and patient with me and kind. And I remember I got a story that the Mayor Washington's top aide was a former pimp and a slumlord. And they freaked out. They freaked out. It's not their fault. I mean, the publisher freaked out. You can't write this. You can't do this. You know, they're terrified because of the mayor, right?
Right.
The mayor then was like beating up on Walter Jacobson. So they were, CBS was terrified. So, you know, so I said, well, you know what? To run this story, can I try to sell it elsewhere? And they said, sure. Just don't do it here or you're done. And, some of the editors wanted me to write it. The publisher was nervous, and I understand. It was a small paper, so I took it to a place that I knew called the Chicago Sun-Times, and they tried to steal the story from me and Mark Geisman, my colleague then.
Yeah,
they tried to steal the story, so we went to the Tribune because we had all the documents in my trunk out of the. Right. Took them out of the courthouse.
I remember you telling me that story.
Right.
You don't know where you got this, but you got this.
Right.
I love that. Well, that's and that kind of ties into another one of the other questions was just asking about what it was like to writing your first column from Peter Brunk on Facebook here, saying that, you know, what was it like going to the Tribune? And he kind of covered that one. I mean, that technically would be not the first column, but first story. I think that's probably what it is.
Well, it wasn't really a byline. We were just Mark Geisman, who passed away this year, and I got a little box on the back end of a front page story. Like Mayor Washington, you know, that time he was a saint, right? He was like, oh my God, you can't criticize him. And we did. And I got the, they put a little box at the end of the story saying, information for this story was presented or whatever to the Tribune by John Cass and Mark Geisman of the Daily Calumet newspaper. And the great thing was that when the Tribune editors called this, when they said, your newspaper doesn't want you to run this story? And I said, call them. And I was crossing my fingers, you know, in my pocket. Like hoping they would say, they would admit the truth, and they did. They said, "Yeah, we're not writing that story. We're not running that story. You run
it." That's amazing.
And that's all I needed.
That is great. And I got one last question for you.
Yeah.
Before we wrap it up here for today, this comes from Randy Toler, T-O-L-E-R, Toler.
Okay.
John Cass, do you remember when I got a pie in my face at a press conference? Founder of the U.S. Green Party at the Holiday Inn in downtown Chicago with four TV cameras present. On the evening news, they played it in slow motion. Just curious, in Florida now. I think it was 1988. Enjoy your columns.
Randy, I don't remember that. I should remember that. It's a rude thing to hit someone with a pie in the face.
Yeah.
I've got one last one I've got to say.
All right.
Two. One is from Denise Shepherd. What's foot traffic like in the Loop these days? Are people coming back to work? What about the businesses that serve the workers, the restaurants, coffee shops, etc.? How are they doing?
I can answer that one because I've gone downtown every day.
Are the commuter trains full? Yeah, answer it.
I haven't been doing the commuter thing yet because I'm still waiting on my second vaccine dose before I jump back on the public transit. But I will say that, for example, when in the heart of the pandemic, it would take me about 7 minutes, 8 minutes, maybe to get down to the studio, to driving. And now yesterday, as we taped this, it's on a Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever it is, it's, which is not a big day normally, at about 2 p.m, it took me roughly 40 minutes to get to work on Lakeshore Drive. And it wasn't because of that shooting or anything like that. It was just because it's just been getting steadily busier. You're seeing it. Certainly lots of workers are back in downtown, and some of the shops are starting to open up. I mean, the new shop just opened up in our building. They were supposed to launch it last year, but it was delayed. But you've seen other shops start to come back online. So it's certainly coming back. People are you know, restarting, if you will, the downtown workforce. So we're there, just not the levels it was before pandemic, but certainly starting.
Last question of today from Ken Dietz. Will Jesse Sharkey, president of the Chicago Teachers Union, run against Lightfoot in the next mayoral race, Jeff Carlin?
I don't know. If they were going to run somebody, I think they would keep him in that position because he's, again, that institutional knowledge concept, because he was such a, you know, he was as a VP under the late Karen Lewis. I think he learned a lot and knows a lot as leadership, and you know, spent a long time there. I don't think they want to give him up. I think they would probably put Gates, the VP now, up if they're going to choose somebody who to be loud and proud. And but I don't think she's polished enough to run that.
Think Sharkey has any say in the matter.
Oh,
because I'm writing a correction now for the column I wrote a few months ago that about Sharkey running against Lori Lightfoot. It will be. It's not going to be Sharkey. Sharkey, right. Stacey Davis Gates is the boss. Just like Tony Soprano was the boss, even though they thought they said Junior Soprano was the boss. He liked it that way. Same thing. Stacey Gates is a driven, ambitious, and very strong-willed person.
Yeah.
The kind of person you need to run the city. Interestingly enough, I don't think, you had the chance. You could have elected Paul Vallis.
Yeah.
A guy who knows how to manage things.
Is a public servant. When we talk about the idea of doing the most good, he's the guy. I mean, he's one of these people who got into it for the right reasons and did it for the right reasons, continues to do it, even though he has no power over anything at the moment, continues to be a fighter for every citizen to have a better life.
And, I told him if he runs, I'll break his legs. Not that I could, he's a giant, but I think you had a chance to elect Paul Vallis, and you know what you did?
Yeah.
You let people play the race card. You let the old-time Daly people come in, Bill Daly, Gary Chico, all these different people running to split off the vote, which made Lori Lightfoot and Preckwinkle stronger. And it was done by a reason. Yeah. You're never going to let a guy like Vallis. You think this town and all these crooks and the institutional crooks who've spent this city into oblivion over decades, that was not just Lori. Do you think they let a guy who knows how to do a forensic audit be in charge of the books? No way.
Yeah,
you can have your Jerry Joyce, Bill Daly, quiet man with Michelino Flynn in the bagpipe fantasy,
right?
And what you got was Lori Lightfoot. Okay. I like Lori too. I like her personally. I think she's taken bad advice and she's stubborn, which I like. I like a stubborn person, but I also think that she didn't see far enough ahead, and we're seeing the results.
Yeah. And I was to say, putting a button on that is that you look at the past mayors who have been, for lack of a better term, transformative in what they've done, big projects, big things, keep the city, what have you. Those people had, Rahms or Daly's of the world, they had the power before they started doing wholesale changes. And Lori didn't have that. She came in trying to do everything, and she didn't have the base to execute. and
no, they had guys with them. Look, anytime anybody would criticize Daly, you know, you criticize Daly, you went on there are people out there that would come to talk to you.
Yeah.
Not me. I mean, I did have an issue with some of them pushing back, but they were the wise guys who they were close to.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is when you're the mayor of Chicago, you need guys, women who understand where the rats run and how they run. And you got to think like a rat and understand the rat culture in order to deal with it. And if you just bring in a bunch of little, green suits that are going to write white papers for you while you're picking sides between the CTU and the Chicago Police Union, tell me how you're going to run the city. You know, I'm just saying.
You can't outwoke the wokists and keep the train on the track.
Right. Jeff Carlin? I think we've said what we had to say. I got to go fishing.
You got to
do radio.
That's right.
So for Jeff Carlin, cat scratch fever survivor, he keeps collecting cats the way I used to collect heirloom tomato plants. And for me, John Cass, columnist, Chicago Tribune, member of editorial board, Jeff is the executive producer at WGN. Thanks for being here for another Chicago Way. And just remember, when you're reading this, I might be standing waist deep in a cold river up north with a steelhead on the line, like a jet plane in the water. See you all next week.